Welcome to the Did You Know Show with your host, Fred Hasse. This week's topic, land sea breezes and snow breezes. I'm Ray, a physics teacher.
And I'm Holly, I'm a Spanish teacher.
And I'm Fred Hasse, a semi-retired meteorologist.
Okay. And check out show notes.
Yes, you can check out the show notes at dykshow.blogspot.com. And also email Fred at fredhasse@gmail.com. Hasse spelled H-A-A-S-E.
So if you have any questions or comments on the show, we'd love to hear feedback.
Yes. Next week, I think,
next show.
Next show, Fred, you'll be talking about monsoons, correct?
Correct.
All right. Let's go ahead and jump into the land sea breezes first. Is that correct, Fred?
That's correct.
Okay. So get us started.
All right. The one of the most influential weather patterns near the coast is a land and sea breeze.
So we're near the ocean.
That's correct.
Near a body of water.
Right, because bodies of water like the Great Lakes also produces land and sea breezes.
All right, so what are they?
Okay, now the best way to describe the phenomena is that you start out in the morning. Let's just start out in the morning and assume, just for sake of argument, that the wind is calm.
Okay.
And the sun is shining, comes up in the morning and starts shining on the land and the sea for that matter. But the land will quickly heat up. The ocean or sea or lake will heat up very much slower. In fact, over our open oceans, the temperature range between night and day is only about 5 degrees or less.
Now, why is that, Fred?
The reason is the high heat capacity of the water. Meaning the water can absorb a lot of heat from the sun without the temperature rising very much. The heat still exists. It's just simply that it takes more heat to make the ocean temperature rise, which in turn the air that's right above it will likewise warm up very slowly.
Okay, so we're talking about the water versus the land. They're both absorbing electromagnetic radiation from the sun, and one of them is the temperature change is less drastic. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. That's correct.
Okay.
Now over land,
does that have to do with the albedo at all, Fred? As well or not?
Albedo does figure in it, but it's more complicated. One thing is, on the average, albedo is actually more over land a little bit than over the water.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What is albedo?
Albedo is a reflectivity or percentage. For example, albedo is, 40% of the light will be reflected off of land. So you say albedo is 40%.
And then for something like snow, it's much higher.
Right. It'd be something like 90% better.
Okay. So that's not the driving factor, though. That's a small factor, but it's actually higher on the land than the water, which does not support the whole thing of the temperature of the water going up less than the land.
Right.
So it has more to do with the makeup. It has more to do with how the temperature relates to the energy coming in from the sun of land versus water.
Right. The water just can absorb more heat than land.
Okay.
Without the temperature rising as much.
Okay.
And so that's the story there. All right. And now if we start out with calm conditions, and I'm doing it just to make an argument easy, is that the air that's being heated over land by the heated ground will cause the air to expand upward. A column of air will get higher due to the heating.
Okay. So the high temperature land and the high temperature air, the column of air starts to get bigger. It expands.
Right.
Okay.
And this causes in the upper levels above the ground that causes the pressures to increase compared to the same height above the water. Because a column of air is expanding upward, that increases the pressures in the upper levels.
Okay.
Now, With this increased pressure over land, this causes in the upper levels, the air tend to start drifting from the land to the water.
Okay.
This piles up the air in the upper levels right along the coast or just offshore.
All right, now we should probably say that this is a little bit simplified because we started with the calm conditions, correct?
Right.
Okay. Because I remember when I learned about land or sea breezes, this kind of sounds like the simplified thing we got the first time around, and then when we took a thermodynamics class, we got way more into it. So.
Yeah, well, that's what it is, because I'm assuming very few people have had much in the way of thermodynamics.
Yes. So this is conceptually just to get your head wrapped around kind of what's going on here. So let's continue. Right. That's fine. Let's continue on.
All right. Now, when the air piles up on the upper levels just offshore, that increases the surface pressure because the amount of air above the coastline has increased. So the pressure increases along the shoreline.
Okay. So we have higher pressures along the shoreline and relatively lower pressures inland?
That's correct, because remember, the air in the upper levels is moving from the land to towards the coast.
Okay.
So that means the surface pressures, the pressures at the ground, will fall.
Okay.
While they increase just offshore as a result of the upper level offshore flow.
And if we have high pressure one place and low pressure another place, I'm betting we're going to get some wind.
That's correct. So along the ground, you'll start getting wind that then blows from the water towards a lower pressure inland.
Okay, so from an area of high pressure to an area of low pressure is the general direction of the wind. So in this case, from the water to the land.
That's correct. In the low levels, it's already going
at the surface. What you'd experience in the later in the day when the morning started out calm. Now the breeze is coming onshore. It's hitting you in the face, coming from the ocean.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so that right there is it. Now, one thing is people might think that when that offshore flow hits a coastline and piles up, it would sink down to the sea level and then go back so you have a circular motion. This is not quite correct. It turns out that air pushing over the water is warmer, or at least I should say potentially warmer than the air at sea level, and actually will accumulate above the coastline and just offshore and tends to sink downward a little bit but not reach the sea surface.
If we had this piling up of the air and the air going upward, could we then also see a distinct line of clouds in this type of situation?
Not along the coast, because that air piles up and tends to drift downward a bit, you tend to lose clouds.
Okay, so the clouds, if they were coming in, would disappear.
That's correct. So
you'd still get a distinct line. It would just be the cloud. There would be no clouds onshore, and there'd be clouds offshore. Is that correct?
The opposite.
Way around. Other way around. Okay.
Along the coastline, where the air is piling up, the clouds would be suppressed, or in fact, may disappear altogether.
Okay.
Inland a little bit, where that low pressure belt
yes.
formed. Here it is. Here you'll form the clouds.
Okay, got it.
And so, therefore, along this is a long. The clouds will form along that low pressure belt just inland, which that low pressure belt can also be considered a sea breeze front.
Okay, and that can move. That can move around. That can move further inland or retreat back towards the coast. Correct.
And most likely, it'll push inland because the air. The air from the sea is colder and will displace the land air as it pushes inland.
So this is going through the afternoon hours.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so usually the sea breeze will start perhaps 5-10 miles inland. I'm talking about the sea breeze front. And then it pushes on inland, reaching distances 30 or 40 miles or more, even up to 200 miles inland.
So if you're somewhere between, you could see the water and 200 miles, you could experience this land sea breeze and its associated front.
That's correct.
Okay. We're 200 miles inland. That seems like a lot. Where has that been? Where can that happen that far inland?
It has been observed in Western India.
Okay.
And it also been observed to reach the San Antonio-Austin area
here
in Texas.
Holy cow.
Is this and, every day that that happens? Every single day?
Not 200 miles, guarantee that.
No, that's rare, but the distance is not so great. Usually, it's more like between 20, it reaches a distance of about 25 to 50 miles is more typical.
On a, and Holly was asking on a daily basis.
That's correct.
Okay. So in Houston, but, this was a, you know, a constant concern because depending on where that front is, that land sea breeze and other factors, you could get, you know, thunderstorms or showers or at least cloud cover.
Daily.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you'll get a belt of clouds along the sea breeze front, which will be pushing inland as the sea breeze pushes inland. If the atmosphere is a little bit unstable, you'll actually form a band of showers or thunderstorms along the sea breeze front.
And this is one of the reasons why Houston gets so many thunderstorms, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at a map that has both either the rainfall map or you look at a
Hello, Fred?
Yeah?
Still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you cut out. Go ahead, continue. All we heard, last thing we heard was rainfall map.
Oh, rainfall map or a map indicating lightning strikes per square mile per year.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice that there is a belt of a rainfall maxima or a lightning strike maxima that runs about 15 to 25 miles inland, starting from near Victoria, Texas, all the way over to through the Florida Panhandle. And that's due to the sea breeze.
So that's the average location of the sea breeze front.
That's correct.
Okay.
How is this related to wind speed? If it's a warmer day or a colder day? I don't know.
Well, it's first of all, the typical sea breeze will blow on the beach. At the beach, it'll blow around, at least along the Gulf Coast, it'll be about 15 miles per hour. It'll sometimes reach higher velocities than that along the California coast because the ocean current there is colder.
Yeah, and you need the temperature differences are driving the wind speeds. So if you have a bigger temperature difference, you're gonna, all other things being equal, you're gonna get bigger winds. Is that correct, Fred?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So Gulf of Mexico's higher average temperatures compared to Pacific Ocean off the coast of California.
But on the other hand, you're much more likely to get the shower and thunderstorm development along the sea breeze front along the Gulf Coast because the air mass is more unstable, whereas along the Pacific Coast, air mass is quite stable, and even though the sea breeze can be quite vigorous, it doesn't really cause any significant weather other than the breeze itself.
Okay.
All right.
And one of the interesting things is that if you've ever lived in San Antonio, during the summer you'll occasionally have some evening showers just suddenly pop up and drift in from the southeast. They usually rarely have thunder in that part of the world, but they are definitely showers, and a moderate showers, and this is the kind of the limit of the sea breeze gets that far inland with the showers, but then it quickly falls apart because by the time it gets that far inland, it's usually during the evening and the daytime heating is just about finished.
So the temperature contrast between the ocean and the land mass starts to go away when the sun goes down.
That's correct.
Yes, because the water doesn't go up and down much, but the temperature that went up for the land for the day, once the sun goes away, starts dropping very quickly back down.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so, one of the things, if you ever look again at one of these rainfall maps, you'll notice that the airport at Mobile gets more rain along the northern Gulf Coast than any other location.
Okay.
And it just so happens that that's the only airport that happens to lie right on the average position of the sea breeze front.
There you go.
And so they pick up an extra lot of rain. Now, in Houston, it happens to be along the sea breeze front, too, but usually it reaches its peak development in between Hobby Airport and Intercontinental. Intercontinental is about 75 miles inland.
So and that's Hobby, the northern airport in Houston.
Right.
Yep. And then the other one. The other one, right. Tell everybody where the other one's at.
The other one is a hobby is something like about 20-25 miles inland in a straight line.
Okay.
And so usually the main sea breeze thunderstorm activity will go roughly through downtown Houston, falling a little short of Intercontinental, but already largely past Hobby by the time it reaches its peak.
And I used to live due west of Houston, the downtown, which explains why there were so many thunderstorms in the afternoon. It seemed almost like every day sometimes.
Yes, exactly.
And the streets would flood every single time, it seemed like, near my apartment anyway.
Yes, and so, and it's and one of the interesting things is the Houston area has a double effect. They get the sea breeze-induced activity, but also they have a heat island. All the power that's put out increases the temperature over Houston, and it turns out that northeast corner of Houston has a second most number of thunderstorm days in the nation.
We should mention that all these thunderstorms, we're not talking severe thunderstorms in the case of the land sea breeze generally. We're just talking about, you know, there's thunder, there's some heavy rain, but we're not talking, you know, supercells or tornadoes or, you know, generally not hail or anything like that. So
that's correct. They're usually pretty mild, but they're very persistent.
Yes.
Then Florida is a special case.
They can have them coming from both ways, right?
That's correct. They get a sea breeze front advancing from the Atlantic and a sea breeze front advancing from the Gulf. And this is why Central Florida has the highest thunderstorm frequency in the United States.
Now
I didn't know that.
Don't they also have the most tornadoes for a state, but they're all weak ones? Is that due to the land sea breeze?
Answer is yes.
Okay, so the colliding land sea breezes can produce some weak tornadoes.
Yeah, well, for that matter, you can develop some real weak tornadoes also associated with just the ordinary sea breeze pushing through off the northern Gulf Coast.
Okay.
And in fact, Houston has more funnel cloud reports than any other city in the United States, but they're all very weak. They're just barely nothing. They're mostly not just barely stronger than the ordinary whirlwind.
There's also a lot of people in Houston to see those funnel clouds.
That's correct.
Lots of eyeballs on the sky sitting in cars, which probably helps some. And no hills to speak of either, just buildings.
All right. Now, sea breezes occur pretty much everywhere. Even in places like Iceland will have sea breezes.
Okay, because anywhere you have that temperature difference between the ocean and the land, you're going to get it. So
that's correct.
So it's a question of how strong.
There's a third thing, which is actually the same thing as a sea breeze, but say, for example, that you have one area that has a snow cover, and right adjacent to it, you'll have no snow cover.
I never thought about this, Fred, but I know where you're going already. This is interesting. Keep going. Sorry.
And so when the sun comes up, the area that does not have the snow will heat up very quickly. With the snow cover, the snow has a very high albedo.
So it reflects most of the sunlight, and it's also snow. So that, I mean, it's even if the temperature was going to go up, so it's got to melt before the temperature on the ground is going to go up much.
That's correct. It's going to have to, in fact, melt before the temperatures can get above the mid-30s.
Yep.
And so with this...
effect.
So you have so the air over the snow cover stays cold over the adjacent land masses that happen to not have snow. You'll develop actually a snow breeze.
Now, how strong does this get? I mean,
it can get pretty strong because of the fact that the temperature contrast can be quite large. Your temperatures can go into the upper 40s or on the landmass around the snow cover and stay in the 30s where the snow is.
Okay.
So they can get
a 15, 20 mile per hour wind, no problem.
Right.
Okay. I had not thought about that. You would be very forecast. I mean, that'd be easy to forecast too, just like a land sea breeze. I've never had to forecast, or I've never been aware of forecasting that. And that next time we get some good snow out here in the Midwest, and there's snowpack like next to us or on us and not somewhere else, I have to take a look at the wind directions around and see if I can pick that out.
Yeah, go in there and do it in the afternoon.
Yes, in the afternoon. Yep.
Now, one thing is that the sea breeze also changes with time for the simple reason the Earth rotates.
Okay, explain.
Explain now. For example, what will happen is that when the sea breeze first develops in the morning, it'll be coming in, that is, without any other wind disturbance affecting it.
So no
it'll
come straight in.
It'll come straight in, perpendicular to the coast.
Okay, so directly from the high pressure to the low pressure, it goes straight in.
That's right. Okay. But after a few hours, or you know, the Earth will turn, and so with the Coriolis parameter coming in, the air will tend to bend to the right of its path.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So instead of so that means in the sea breeze will, if you're looking downwind, the sea breeze will start gradually angling around to where it's starting to come from your left instead of towards your back.
Okay.
And by the evening, it becomes perfectly balanced, and so that the sea breeze becomes parallel to the coast.
Oh, wow.
By sometime in the evening before it finally just dissolves altogether.
Yep.
Now, at the same time, in the upper, right along the that low-pressure belt, the sea breeze front, in front of the sea breeze front, the winds have a tendency to rotate the opposite way. You can imagine now you got a low-pressure trough, so if you have an east-west low-pressure belt sea breeze front like you do along the northern Gulf, the winds in front of the sea breeze front will tend to rotate to the east, and the winds on the south side will tend to rotate towards the west.
Okay.
And usually, like I say, it becomes the winds tend to become almost parallel to the front by the time the sun goes down, but then the sea breeze is going to die then anyway.
Yes. Okay.
Now, at night, the land cools, the ocean stays warm.
So you can have the opposite.
Yeah. Now, this time, the,
still called a land
column
sea breeze,
of air,
right?
The column of air will tend to shrink downward over land, creating an or the pressures will fall in the upper levels.
Okay.
And this causes the winds in the upper levels to start moving from the ocean to land, mm-hmm. increasing the pressures just inland, and then you start getting a drift of air from the land back to the sea.
Okay. So the low pressure is over the sea and the high pressure is over the land.
That's correct.
Okay, so from high to low, now if you're standing on the shore looking at the ocean, the wind's at your back.
That's correct.
Okay.
But usually the land breeze is much weaker than the sea breeze, whereas a sea breeze typically runs around 10, 15, even 20 knots.
Okay.
The land breeze is really more than about 5.
And is that because the temperature contrast is not as great generally?
No, it's actually, that's not the reason.
Oh.
The reason is that the cooling layer, the cooled layer, is very shallow over land. It's
oh, okay.
only something like about 1,000 feet deep or so.
Okay.
Whereas the daytime heating over land will extend through the lowest 2,000 to 4,000 feet or so.
Okay.
And so because it's a lot shallower, the pressure changes that.
Now, if the temperature contrasts are the same, is that due to the fact that the cold air, that low layer just, you know, it doesn't mix as well as the warm layer in the afternoon over land, or why is that layer actually shallower?
Well, it is that cool air will stay at the bottom.
Okay, so it is that. Okay, so the cool air is kind of stuck, whereas when you get that warm air, it starts to rise up and mix with the colder air above it, so it does
right.
a better job of warming the upper layers.
That's correct.
Okay. So it's not as bad when it's at night when it's going out.
Right.
So you got it.
Now, so you now we've talked about the how it can be developed from what we call a direct thermal circulation. We talked about how the wind direction can change due to the fact the Earth rotates, and now I'll just mention the complicating factor. Like for example, suppose that we have broad scale winds already existing, and the sea breeze is going to try to develop in spite of the previously existing wind flow.
So in other words, if you've got like a north wind already in the morning, can the sea breeze make any progress and actually develop a south wind that you're going to feel?
And the answer is that depends on how strong that north wind is.
Okay. And,
usually if that for like along the Texas, it depends on also the temperature contrast that develops between the land and the sea. The greater the temperature contrast, that'll enable the sea breeze to buck the offshore flow.
So sometimes it can and sometimes it can't.
That's correct.
Okay.
And usually the sea breeze front is much sharper when you have an offshore broad scale flow. Okay. I mean, you'll have north wind.
Yeah, because
you'll have an offshore wind, and then all of a sudden it abruptly shifts to the south.
So if something like that sets up then, because you got those colliding winds at the surface, are you more likely to have more thunderstorm coverage?
More significant for along the Gulf Coast, that wouldn't be true because that offshore flow will be a whole bunch drier.
Okay, because the northerly wind, it's not coming off the Gulf, so the air mass it's dealing with isn't as suitable for thunderstorms.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Is that it, Fred? We cover all the aspects of land, sea breezes, and snow breezes, which I didn't know about or hadn't thought about.
Right. And by the way, the same idea of the wind turning due to the around the snow cover, it will happen in that case just like the sea breeze turning
at night,
due to the rotation of the earth.
Oh, okay.
It'll happen
at night, and it'll die down. And I would assume that unless something really, I mean, the land would have to get below freezing for it to go the other way, right?
Yeah, or get cold in the snow surface, which it will not do.
It wouldn't do that.
Snow is an extremely good radiator of infrared, and the air gets very cold over snow.
Yes. Okay. So the it'll die down at night, but it's not going to flip like the land sea breeze does.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I learned something.
Very interesting.
Yes. So next time we're somewhere near a body of water, we'll have to pay attention to the wind directions.
Yeah, I never even thought about any of this at all.
I experienced it a lot in Houston, so I do remember it. I remember forecasting it and looking at it on the wind directions and where the thunderstorms were. So it's been a little while since I looked at a land sea breeze, though.
Yeah, that also the land sea breeze effect also explains why the skies tend to become very clear along the coastline during the afternoons.
Because the land sea breeze has moved inland. It's not right
there
on the coast anymore.
Oh, okay.
So you see all the clouds, and then you're driving to the beach, and it gets nice and sunny. It's perfect, right? In the afternoon, you're at the beach. All right. Well, check out the show notes. We'll try to find picture of the circulation. And remember, it's not quite as simple as whatever picture we find, but it'll get you the idea. So if you're having a tough time visualizing what we're talking about with where the low pressure was and the high pressure, there's lots of pictures out there that show you the general circulation of the air. But remember, it's a little bit oversimplified as we talked about. So
just a model?
A conceptual model to get your head wrapped around what's going on. Without all the intricacies that you'd learn if you're going to be a meteorologist. So
you can find those at dykshow.blogspot.com. And then also email Fred at fredhasse@gmail.com. Or any of us, yes. Make sure you spell Hasse, Haase.
And thank you for listening. Next week, the next show
will be about monsoons.
Will be about monsoons. I'm Ray.
And I'm Holly.
I'm Fred.
Until next time.